She overcame disinterest in a sleepy primary election by highlighting her ability to shoot guns and castrate hogs. And last night, Joni Ernst became the first female Republican U.S. Senate nominee in Iowa history. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On this Politics Day, we'll talk about the surprising margin of Joni Ernst's victory, what makes her so appealing, and look forward to her campaign against Democrat Bruce Braley for the general election. We'll also look at the outcome of the other primaries in two other open congressional races, the first and the third. Our analysts, Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register and Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. What primary candidate got your vote yesterday, and why? Join our discussion after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Yesterday's much-anticipated primaries will be the focus of much of our Politics Day here on River to River this Wednesday. Our analysts, Kathy Obradovich, a political columnist for the Des Moines Register, and Tim Hagel, associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Three open congressional seats from Iowa up for grabs in this November's midterm elections, a very rare occurrence in Iowa politics. The open U.S. Senate seat left by the retirement of Tom Harkin, the first congressional district seat left open by Congressman Bruce Braley, leaving to run for that open Senate seat, and the third district seat left open by the retirement of Congressman Tom Latham. We'll turn to Tim and Kathy for their analysis of these races in just a moment and look forward to November. But first, let's go to IPR correspondent Joyce Russell, who was with the campaign of Joni Ernst last night as the returns came in. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
Joni Ernst, 43-year-old farmer's daughter turned state senator, National Guard officer, dominating the field to become the first female GOP U.S. Senate nominee in Iowa history. No surprise that she won. The polling was there. But, Joyce, it is a surprise by how much she won, isn't it?
It is. And I talked to David Oman after the results came in. He's a longtime GOP moderate Republican in Iowa. And I asked him about those polls, and he said, well, actually, if you add the undecideds in with what she was polling, it just looks like the undecideds went for her. And he says that's human nature. She was leading, and so if you're undecided, you want to go with the winner.
Mm-hmm. What was the mood at the campaign, with the campaign, as these returns came in? I imagine somewhat emotional.
She was very emotional on the stump. She cried a couple of times. Part of that is just exhaustion from the exhaustion from the campaign, but lots of enthusiasm for her candidacy.
What are your thoughts on what propelled her to the front of the GOP pack? Just a couple of months ago, we were talking about how this was just someone to put up there for Braley to defeat, according to polls.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that her very colorful television ads propelled her to national attention, actually, the one that had to do with that she was a farm girl and she castrated hogs, and then there was another gun-related one. Very clever, very professionally produced, and it garnered national attention. And, you know, the big thing you battle when you're an unknown like her is name recognition, and so quickly her name got out there. But, you know, in addition to that, she has a lot of attractive qualities for an Iowa candidate. She has a farm background, a military background, very strong on conservative issues. So it wasn't just the ads, but they definitely helped.
And Joyce, this is remarkable also in that at the beginning of this GOP primary, her primary challenger was considered to be Mark Jacobs, a man, an entrepreneur, a businessman who's worth millions, who put millions into this race. And I see by the final tally, Joni Ernst, 56%. Sam Clovis coming in second with 18%. And Mark Jacobs, a 16.8%, a close third there after spending millions of his dollars.
So he outspent Joni Ernst, but Senator Ernst also got a lot of outside help once her name was started to get out there, and she got help from both conservative and moderate supporters and groups.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to November, what does Joni Ernst bring to this general election facing Bruce Braley?
Well, she's going to get just financially. They're both going to get a lot of outside help. This is a targeted Senate race, Republicans, you know, feel like they have a chance to, they're shooting for control of the U.S. Senate. This is definitely one of the races that they'll be targeting. So she'll have plenty of financial support. As I was saying before, she's someone used the term consensus candidate. I don't know if I would go that far, but she does appeal. She got the backing of the National Rifle Association and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So that doesn't happen very often. And then, more than one person said last night, she's just a likable candidate. And one of the people that I asked was Kane Robinson. He's a former chair of the Iowa Republican Party and former president of the National Rifle Association, president of the NRA on the national level. And so here's what he said.
She's very interesting. There are more substantive reasons, but one of the first things is that from a political standpoint, she's interesting and she's real. She's really connecting with people, and she did with me. And philosophically, she's fine and all the general conservative things that I believe in and always have. But I believe she can win because people want to know about her. She's interesting. When she's done talking, they want to ask her questions about what all she's doing and things like that. So it's a spark that some candidates have that is a huge asset.
And he went on. I asked him also about name recognition, where Senator Ernst was really very unknown when she started her campaign. However, she's just had the benefit of a statewide primary, and her direct mail has been in people's mailboxes. Like we were saying, she's gotten the national attention. And Bruce Braley, even though he is a sitting congressman, Mr. Robinson said it put him on some level at a disadvantage that he didn't run a statewide primary and have his name out there statewide.
Iowa Public Radio correspondent Joyce Russell, thank you. Covering the campaign of Joni Ernst, successful in becoming the first GOP U.S. Senate nominee in Iowa history. No doubt, the months to come, we'll be talking to you again about this race now in November. Thanks, Joyce.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Politics Wednesday here on River to River, talking about, of course, the primaries here in Iowa yesterday. And our guest for the rest of the hour, Kathy Obradovich, political columnist for the Des Moines Register, Tim Hagel, associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. And Tim and Kathy, hello to both of you.
Hey. Hi, Ben.
We want to throw out some trivia to our listeners, because this is a great opportunity to do that. As I mentioned there before, this Joni Ernst has become the first female Republican U.S. Senate nominee in Iowa history. If elected, she would be the first woman to represent Iowa in Washington. But I want to ask a trivia question to see if one of our listeners can come up with this. Here it is. When was the last time Iowa had two Republican senators? What year? When was the last time Iowa had two Republican senators? I'll give you a hint. Not this century. We have to go back one century. That's the only hint I'm going to give you. And Tim and Kathy, you're not allowed to. You're allowed to confirm the correct guess from our listener, but not spill the beans now. 1-866-780-9100. When was the last time Iowa had two Republican senators? Please give us a call if you know the answer to that. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. The questions we want to throw out to our listeners is, what primary candidate got your vote yesterday, and why? We'd like you to join our conversation. Again, 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk more about what is definitely in the spotlight, not only here in Iowa, but nationally, the victory of Joni Ernst, blowing past the 35% necessary to claim victory over the four competitors, including a retired businessman, Mark Jacobs, who self-funded his campaign with millions of his own dollars. She claims 56% of the vote, far more than that 35% needed to avoid the nomination to go to convention. Kathy, how surprised are you by that victory margin?
I think the margin was higher than most of us were expecting. She, in our Des Moines Register poll over the weekend, was at 36%. She had been climbing during most of the time that our poll was in the field. But she had leveled off that Friday before the primary. But clearly she picked up again over the weekend, continued to climb. And I think, as Joyce said, picked up those undecided voters. We had about 16% undecided in our poll. The other thing that we saw was Mark Jacobs, who he was in second place in our poll. He was falling every single day that we polled. So he was in free fall already. And so it did not surprise me that he ended up actually in third place behind Sam Clovis.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a reason why Mark Jacobs is falling after spending all of his money? Not all of his money, but more than any other candidate had. I think $3 million was the number put on that.
I don't think that as voters were making their decision that he had made a really big impression on them. His ads were pretty run of the mill. He had also been attacking Joni Ernst in part on her voting record of missed votes in the Iowa Senate. He had been sending out a lot of attack mailers, and in what was otherwise a pretty cordial primary, that may have actually hurt him that he was on the attack.
Mm-hmm. A consensus candidate is the phrase that Joyce quoted there, Tim Hagel. Is it remarkable that she was able to get the endorsement of both the establishment GOP and the Tea Party?
Well, yes and no. Typical professor answer, right? it was surprising in the sense that you often don't have those groups coming together. As the earlier report indicated, she was endorsed by the NRA and the Chamber of Commerce, two groups that maybe don't always go for the same candidate. But on the other hand, politics in Iowa is different than it is in a lot of other states. And, you know, we may talk later in the program about what's going on in Mississippi and their Senate race and the GOP primary, where they're having a big fight between the Tea Party and the establishment. We just don't see that quite as much, that sort of divisions and squabbles we've had here in mm-hmm. Iowa, particularly among the Republicans, are a little bit different. They don't really fall along that traditional Tea Party establishment kind of line. And so given the resume and the issues that Ernst represented, it's not entirely surprising that she seemed to be the candidate that a lot of people picked, clearly picked last night, as the best to represent the Republicans for the general election.
We mentioned the ads as a part of her strategy that really gave her attention not only here in Iowa but nationally. Kathy, I wondered, though, on the other side, did Bruce Braley's gaffe from months ago, you might have a farmer from Iowa who never went to law school, never practiced law, serving as the next chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, speaking of the Senator Grassley, did his gaffe contribute to her rise in any way, feed into this campaign?
Well, you might recall, Ben, that her ads came out about the same time as that video surfaced from Texas of him making that comment, Bruce Braley making that comment to trial lawyers at a Texas fundraiser, trying to convince them that they wouldn't want Chuck Grassley, a Iowa farmer who never went to law school, as the next chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Her ads came out about the same time. So at a time when that gaffe was, severe enough to cause people, national observers around the country, to look at that race again and say, well, is Bruce Braley more vulnerable than we really thought he was? And then all of a sudden she's out here with this splash of advertising, which also caught widespread national attention. Even just yesterday and this morning, those ads are being replayed around the country just because they're so memorable. And so I think it was a combination of those two things at the same time that helped elevate Joni Ernst above the pack.
Okay, 1-866-780-9100. Throwing out our trivia question as we talk about yesterday's primaries, when was the last time Iowa had two Republican senators? Let's go to Tim in Des Moines. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hi. Do you know the answer to our trivia question?
I think it was Jepson and Grassley in the early 80s.
Roger Jepson and Chuck Grassley. That's not the answer that I have. Kathy, Tim?
Not sure.
It sure seems like that would be right. Both Republicans, Roger Jepson, a one-time senator, and Chuck Grass. I had Jack Miller in 1969 serving with Burke B. Hickenlooper until 1969, when Harold Hughes succeeded him. Tim, in Des Moines, how did you come to that conclusion? Did you use some resources?
I've always followed politics, and I know for a fact that that in the early 80s we had two Republicans. One of them was Jepson and the other was Grassley. And I believe they were both elected at the same time. And as you intimated, Jepson was only a one-termer.
Mm-hmm. And followed in by Senator Harkin.
Harkin was elected, I believe, in 84. And so just prior to Harkin's election, the two senators from Iowa were both Republicans.
Tim, in Des Moines, you get our Political Junkie Award for today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. 1-866-780-9100. Trivia is now aside. Let's get to what you think about yesterday's vote. What primary candidate got your vote yesterday and why? 1-866-780-9100. Let's look forward to this campaign between Joni Ernst and Bruce Braley. Tim Hagel, I'm going to make you a fly on the wall of the Braley campaign and ask you, how worried are you about the voices that you hear as that fly? What sort of worried voices do you hear from the Braley campaign, if you could imagine those voices?
Well, it's hard to say how worried they are. I think that they would have preferred somebody other than Joni Ernst, because it does hamper their ability to make certain arguments. And even Joni Ernst apparently last night was talking about that she's looking forward to Bruce Braley explaining to her about the war on women. And as a woman, she'll be able to counter a lot of those arguments. So that sort of takes something off the table, although some Democrats were even last night on Twitter trying to make that particular argument. So we'll see how it goes. But certainly what Bruce Braley has going for him is, as a current sitting member of Congress, he's familiar with a lot of the national issues that are going on. And as a trial lawyer, he should be able to articulate his positions on those issues fairly well, whether it's campaign events, interviews, even the debates, assuming that we'll have a few of those. And that's where Joni Ernst has to really step up. She's going to need to do a lot of preparing that she's run pretty much at this point on a more general, here's my stance, my general position, but she's going to need to know more of the specifics come the general election, because that's what people are going to be asking her about. And so she'll need to be able to articulate some of the specifics, maybe not everything, of course, because she's not an incumbent right now and hasn't dealt with a lot of these issues beyond the state level. But the ability to articulate those positions are going to be critically important for her.
How do you see Joni Ernst positioning herself for November, Kathy?
I think that the ads may have pigeonholed her as being perhaps more one-dimensional than she really is. I think the idea of the pistol packing, Harley riding, hog castrating, pork cutting, that is great for political ads. But I do think that she there's more to her image than that. I do expect her to spend a lot more time talking about her military service. That is something that can appeal across party lines, as she does have to do some unification of her own party. But I think also she's in a position, as well as she did in the primary, that she can start reaching out to general election of voters, particularly independents and swing voters. So that military background, I think, will really help her with that. And also, she has an opportunity to talk about issues that perhaps that more independent group might be likely to side with her. For example, Obamacare. Independents typically would join with Republicans in not particularly caring for that law.
And she can really play the card of the outsider. She's outside to Washington politics, an agent of change. We see this again and again in politics, going to Congress, a Congress in Washington with historically low approval ratings across the country, also here in Iowa. Let's go to John in Washington. John, 1-866-780-9100. John in Washington, Iowa. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm referring to the comment that Bruce Braley said Grassley was not a lawyer and Grassley was a farmer. What part of that is untrue? How can that be a gaffe, telling the truth?
Okay.
The Senate Judiciary Committee is arguably the most powerful committee in Congress. What part of Braley's comment was not true?
Excellent question, because there is truth there, but it did cause an uproar. Tim Hagel, what was the problem with that comment? And let me repeat it verbatim. Words of Bruce Braley. You might have a farmer from Iowa who never went to law school, never practiced law, serving as the next chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, certainly it's true. That's what you could have. The problem with the comment was that it suggested that somebody who wasn't a lawyer and was just a farmer from Iowa couldn't serve as the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I might argue as to how important it is. It certainly is important. And since I study the judiciary, it's important to me because they're the folks that will hold hearings on Supreme Court nominees and others as well. But you don't have to be a lawyer to be the chair of that committee. And in fact, particularly for somebody like Grassley, who has been on this in the Senate and on that committee for years and years, he's certainly learned plenty about what it takes to be a good judge.
Mm-hmm. And with Iowa as an ag state, Kathy, you don't want to portray yourself as not one of the people.
No. And, you know, there's a couple problems with that. It also underscored the fact that he was talking to a special interest group, trial lawyers, and making comments about, the people back home. While he's essentially trying to raise money from the special interest group. So that it was bad on a number of levels. Bruce Braley knew it was bad, and so which is why he promptly apologized and whenever asked about it since then, has repeated that he does believe that Chuck Grassley is amply qualified to chair that Senate Judiciary Committee because of his many, many years of experience. And also, he has really started to underscore and outline his own rural background in Iowa as a way of suggesting that, yes, I do know that farmers are capable of doing all kinds of things.
Okay. John, though, in Washington, Iowa, great question. How can a truthful statement put you in the doghouse as a politician? John, thanks.
Thank you.
Before we go to break, tell me, Kathy, this race has gained national attention in recent weeks. Before the primary Senate seat was before Joni Ernst launched that ad and this got some momentum, this Senate seat was, if I'm not mistaken, lean Democratic, even solid Democratic, as analysts would have it. Now, can we call it a toss-up?
I think that it's pretty close to being a toss-up in – It may, people apply different criteria as they're doing their own analysis of these races. But Bruce Braley is, I wouldn't ever call him vulnerable, but he's still going to have probably more money. He's going to have more money starting off this general election race. Joni Ernst is going to have to rebuild that.
She get a lot of national money considering the attention she's gotten nationally?
I think they both will. I think they both will. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it helps Joni Ernst that she beat a much better funded competitor to put over $2 million of his own money into the race. And so she can also make that argument that even if she is outspent, that is not going to matter.
Tim, briefly before we go to break.
Yeah, and even in terms of the money, though, that she's got to bring in some state money to hire field operatives and or get out the vote operation. It can't all be outside money that's just going to go to advertising.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk more about the primary results yesterday and look forward to what they will mean as we now enter the general election campaign toward the midterm elections. We'd like to have you join our conversation. What primary candidate got your vote yesterday and why? And when we come back, we also want to talk about the other open congressional seats that had primaries yesterday. Iowa's first district in the northeast part of the state and the third district in the southwest part of the state. Join our conversation 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Back with Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. Stay tuned. So nice to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. For decades, U.S. climate change policy has amounted to do as I say, not as I do. However, this week, President Obama announced his boldest step yet to reduce the nation's biggest source of pollution blamed for global warming, carbon emission from power plants. Tomorrow on this program, we'll look at the effects of this new energy proposal on the state of Iowa. We'll look at potential job loss or creation, as well as the effects on the environment and public health tomorrow. Today, Politics Wednesday with Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, talking about the primaries feeding into the three open congressional seats from Iowa. They're up for grabs this November in the midterm elections, a rare occurrence in Iowa politics. We're analyzing the results of those primaries now that we know for the most part who will be facing whom in these three races. We wanted to finish up talking about Joni Ernst and have you join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. What issues will decide who gets your vote in the general election coming up in the midterm? Joni Ernst, surprisingly for most everyone, blew past that 35% necessary to claim victory over her four competitors. Avoid having it go to convention by claiming 56% of the vote. I wanted to ask you, Kathy Obradovich, if she wins, Ernst would be the first female to represent Iowa in Washington. In the campaign, does this give her any kind of advantage, especially for young women?
Well, I think that it, as somebody mentioned earlier, that it will give her a chance to counter the classic argument about Republican war on women. I don't know if that was you, Tim, who said that.
Mm-hmm.
And she can, you know, I think that it might give her an opportunity to, you know, also emphasize herself as a change candidate because, you know, just by very virtue of being the first woman, she could argue that she's a change for Iowa. So those types of things, I think, are subtle. I do not expect her to go out and say, vote for me because I'm a woman, mm-hmm. In part because I think that would help turn off Republican women, turn off Republicans in the base. They say we want to vote for the best candidate, not just for a woman or a man. So I think she has to be careful about how she goes about that.
Tim Hagel, does Bruce Braley's campaign have to be careful about how they attack a female candidate because of her gender?
They do, in particular, because Republicans will be watching very carefully that in the past, when you've had women who were running as Democrats, if Republican opponents said something untoward, then there would be cries of war on women, sexism, all those sorts of things. And so now that the shoe's on the other foot, that Republicans will be looking very carefully at anything Braley says or does to see whether he's violating those same sort of standards. So they'll hold him to the same standards as Republican candidates have been held to.
To this point, a Facebook post on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page from Doug. Doug writes, I voted for Joni Ernst because I think she will bring some accountability to Washington, whereas Braley is a status quo candidate. I see the Democrat hashtag war on women as begun in their attacks on Ernst. So there's one comment from our listener. Let's not saying we can't go back to this race, but let's make sure we include the two other open congressional races, the primaries for those. Let's go to the 3rd Congressional District. None of the six candidates, Kathy, in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District Republican primary received the minimum of 35% of the votes needed for the nomination. I guess this sends the decision to a convention. Who were the candidates?
Well, first of all, interesting field. And I think that the fact that this is going to convention is not an indication of lack of interest or anything like that. I think we had at least four very competitive candidates and five really that were able to raise enough money to have some advertising in the race. So the top vote getter was Brad Zahn. He has run for this seat before. He was the Republican nominee in 2010. And a state senator from Urbandale, very well known in Polk County, which is the population center of this district. So that was an advantage for him. He won about, I think he won about a third of the vote in Polk County. Next, Robert Kramer. He is a political newcomer to elected office, except I think maybe a school board in Johnston. He came on the statewide stage when Governor Branstad tried to appoint him to the Board of Regents, and Democrats in the Senate knocked down his nomination because they didn't like his activism on Christian conservative social issues. He is a favorite of the family leader and Bob Vanderplaats, and he is one of their board members or has been part of that group. So evangelical Christians really like him. Plus, he has been able to raise a lot of money. He's a bridge builder. He's in with the construction circles who like to make
literally a bridge builder.
Yes, literally a bridge builder. He used that metaphor in a lot of his ads. So he is. he is going to be strong financially. Monty Shaw, who heads the Renewable Fuel Association in Iowa, very personable candidate, very knowledgeable about the issues. The Des Moines Register's editorial board endorsed him in that race. And he has really been playing on his rural background and his facility with agricultural issues. Then David Young, former chief of staff of Chuck Grassley, he moved over from the Senate Republican primary, and he was one of the better funded candidates. People may recognize him from his ads. He did magic tricks in his ads, I think was I thought they were effective. Other people didn't necessarily. He's very wonky and very knowledgeable about the issues. Maybe not the best candidate on the stump. Mm. And then also Joe Graninette, phys ed teacher from Des Moines, at no money and very little chance.
Don't forget Matt Schultz.
Yeah, sorry.
And I have a question. Secretary of State Matt Schultz in the running there, 18.3% of the vote. Not that far behind the leader, 26.5% going to Brad Zahn. But are you surprised, Tim Hagel, that our Secretary of State didn't do better considering his name recognition?
Well, not particularly. Having good name recognition is fine, but it's a combination of getting a good ground game, getting out there and explaining yourself on issues. I think probably some people were a little concerned that because Matt Schultz had taken such strong positions as Secretary of State on the voter ID position, that they may be concerned if that would turn off some voters in the general election. So he may have lost a little support because of that. But he was in the mix, and he basically finished, it looks like, in third place with 20.1% of the vote.
So I think what hurt Matt Schultz more than the voter ID was the news that he was paying political appointees in his office after their positions had been eliminated, paying them to work from home. That issue. Did not go over well with fiscally conservative Republicans who are, wanting to make sure that they are electing a watchdog of the taxpayers' dollars.
Tim Hagel, now that this third district primary is done for the Republican primary, it goes to convention. Do you see one candidate or certain candidates having an advantage in this setting of the convention?
People often talk about the delegates that go to a convention are a different breed than the folks even that vote in the primary. And primary voters do tend to be the ones that are paying more attention, more party activists and so forth. And that's even more true when you get to the delegates. And somebody like a Brad Zahn, who's got a lot of connections, particularly in Polk County, as Kathy was saying, would certainly have a strong hand. But on the other hand, the question will be as to whether those delegates are concerned that Zahn didn't perform better, whether it was this time around or previously when he was the nominee, and if they're looking for somebody new.
Mm-hmm. Is electability really at the heart of it when it goes to convention?
I think that that's part of it. Although typically, though, you do have we're really hardcore activists who are going to be the people who are willing to give up their entire Saturday, not just for this convention, but for the county convention and the district convention and the state convention. So these people are very involved. They're very knowledgeable. They are the ones who are really paying attention to every turn of the screw in these campaigns. And so I do expect them to be worried about it. They're also interested in nominating somebody that they think will best represent their issues, the ones that they care about most in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Whoever gets it, what can we say about the general election facing Democrat Stacey Apple?
Well, I think that, first of all, Republicans, whoever gets nominated is going to be somebody who failed to get the support of more than 25% of the Republican primary goers. So that person is going to have to work a little bit harder to shore up the base of the Republican Party before going up against Stacey Apples. I think that most of the candidates they had to spend a lot of money in these primaries. They're going to have to rebuild their war chests as well to go up against Stacey Apple. Now, Stacey Apple, unlike perhaps Bruce Braley, she is not going to be very well known outside of her home county. She is a former state senator, but you know, I think that she also might have actually benefited from having a primary to shake out her message and to get her name out there in the county.
When we look at
the district,
when we look at the 3rd congressional district of Iowa's 4 districts since redistricting took place, is the not the 3rd the most competitive district? In terms of voter registration,
it is. It is, and a swing district as well.
Okay. Let's talk about the 1st district. There, State Representative Pat Murphy squeaking past that 35% of the vote in the Democratic primary for the 1st district in northeast Iowa. That avoids a special convention to select the nominee. He will be the nominee, the former Speaker of the Iowa House from Dubuque. Edging out 3 candidates. He'll now face Republican businessman and fellow Dubuquer Rod Blum in the general election. Rod Blum won that 1st Congressional District Republican primary. Tim Hagel, any surprise in this race?
Not particularly. We saw that the race was developing, and early on it seemed that Blum on the Republican side was taking a lead, and Murphy was on for the Democrats as well, although other Democrats got a number of endorsements is sort of among the various people. But he seemed to get more and more from a number of unions. Other unions, again, endorsed some of the other candidates, but he seemed to get more and seemed to make more of them. His connections with other state legislators, number of endorsements there, and so just sort of his connections were able to propel him to, again, just over that 35%. So he also was going to have to work a little bit to shore up the party, although at least from some tweets last night, it seemed that people were going to coalesce around him pretty quickly.
According to my numbers, which, Kathy, I think come from the Des Moines Register, Democrats outnumbering Republicans in the 1st district by more than 26,000 voters. What will it take for Blum to have take this seat from the Democrats?
I think that, first of all, it's an interesting race that's sort of centered around Dubuque. So both of those candidates are going to be better known in parts of the district than others. They're going to have to both work to make sure that their name is out. I think that it may be pretty close to a classic liberal Democrat conservative Republican race. They're going to be drawing contrasts. Rod Blum has been a Liberty Movement supporter as well, so he can mobilize that segment of the party and help him raise some money that way. So, you know, I think that it could be an interesting race, but I do think that Pat Murphy, both by party registration and the fact that he is pretty well known in that district, has an advantage going in.
One interesting thing about that, though, is that just looking at who voted, in terms of the numbers, that given the competitiveness on the Democratic side, you would think that they would have had really strong turnout. But it looks like about just a little under 31,000 people voted in the Republican primary in the 1st district, but a little under 28,000 in the Democratic side. So that voter registration advantage didn't show up in the primaries.
As we finish up talking about these races for the open seats, these 3 open congressional seats, can I get a feeling from the two of you of what you feel the issues are that will be at the center of this race now as we head toward November? Kathy, what are the pivotal issues?
Well, I think that a couple of things. First of all, in some ways, we're going to see a replay of the 2012 election in that the issues that we've been seeing in the primary and the issues that candidates have been talking about in both parties have sort of classically mirrored the Republican race for president in 2012 versus Barack Obama's reelection race, with Republicans talking about repealing Obamacare, replacing it with some market-based solutions, Democrats talking about middle class and strengthening the middle class and improving income in the middle class, and then overall a competition of talking about how to get the American economy back growing at a rate that you know, people feel is more appropriate than it's growing now.
And along those lines, of course, there are always issues that pop up along the way. But one of the things we've seen at the national level is that, of course, there's the push to raise the minimum wage. There's the push on the climate change. And we had regulations announced just the other day. And these things will affect Iowa. Now, we have a very low unemployment rate, but it could be that some of these changes and some of these policies could hurt that low unemployment rate and cause particular problems in Iowa. So that would be something that in particular Republicans will be concerned about, and Democrats would then need to be able to justify the particular actions.
This feeds into our program tomorrow. You won't be part of our program, but we'll be talking about this initiative by the president, planning a 30% reduction in carbon dioxide emissions from power plants by 2030. What does this inject into this midterm race, Kathy? What do you see there? Perhaps particular to the Midwest and Iowa.
Well, I think that first of all, there's going to be an argument between the candidates about, you know, who is responsible for global warming and what can people actually do about that. Bruce Braley, of course, has been on the side of the president saying this is a man-made phenomenon and something that not only do Americans have to deal with the effects, but they ought to be also working on the causes through this carbon mitigation. Joni Ernst has kind of said she doesn't think that there's enough proof out there that there that this is caused by human activity. And, you know, I think that she is going to make the Republican argument that this is basically just a money grab by the federal government and, you know, something that is going to put more burdensome regulations and expensive regulations on businesses and therefore kill jobs.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about one of the races that we haven't mentioned, the 2nd District. We have a rematch there. I'd like to have you quickly comment on. Incumbent Democrat Dave Loebsack will now face Republican Marionette Miller Meeks, taking him on for, this is what, Tim Hagel, the third time?
Third time.
Miller Meeks ran against Loebsack in 2008, 2010. She's an ophthalmologist serving 24 years in the U.S. Army as a nurse and a physician, also a member of the faculty at the University of Iowa in ophthalmology, first female president of the Iowa Medical Society, most recently serving 3 years as director of the Iowa Department of Public Health, resigning in January, appointed by Terry Branstad. Do you see anything different in this rematch, Kathy Obradovich?
I think that Marionette Miller Meeks is a better candidate than she was in either of her past two outings. I've seen her out on the stump this time. She's shown up at some of the sort of candidate cattle calls at county events around the state. And I think that her stump speech has improved a lot. She really does. She's putting a lot of energy into it. She makes people sit up and take notice. I also just think that her experience of having been a candidate before made a big difference in this primary. She came in late. She defeated a state legislator who had already raised money, had raised more money, et cetera.
Mark Lofgren.
Mark Lofgren. And so I think for Muscatine, so I do think that she has improved her. Now, does that mean that, you know, she's got a better chance against an incumbent and a fairly popular incumbent in his district? I don't know. It's always an uphill battle against an incumbent no matter what. And so you know, she's going to have some luck as well as improved talent, I think, on the campaign trail.
Tim Hagel, we have just over a minute. I want to have you comment. Something you mentioned earlier was the race in Mississippi that's receiving a lot of national attention. The Tea Party-backed state senator Chris McDaniel forcing incumbent Thad Cochran into what appears to be a runoff in Mississippi's Republican primary. What do you see as interesting there?
Well, it's interesting because that's the race that's characterized as the Tea Party versus the establishment. And Cochran is 76 years old and maybe had been thinking about retiring, but then hung on for this particular race and yet still is actually behind by like a percentage point or something. McDaniel, who didn't get to 50%, so it looks like it's going to be a runoff. But what particularly makes that noticeable is that it's been a very nasty race. Things have been going on down there, and the expectation is that if it does, in fact, go to a runoff, that it's going to continue to be a bit of a bloodbath.
Mm-hmm. And Kathy, your comment on this would be one of the only, if not the only, Tea Party victory, if that was it.
Yeah, and I don't know that the victory is going to fall on whether it's a Tea Party versus establishment. I think that a lot of the other things that have been going on, this allegation that someone broke into a nursing home and took terrible pictures of a candidate's wife. Cochran's wife, who's suffering from dementia. I mean, I think that those kinds of things are what voters are probably going to pay more attention to.
Real life stranger than fiction, I guess, is the comment on that one. Kathy Obradovich, thank you very much. Political economist for columnist for the Des Moines Register. Tim Hagel, associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Thank you for dissecting our primary results and looking forward, Kathy and Tim.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Joining me in the studio now, Charity Nebbe, host of Talk of Iowa, weekdays at 10 o'clock. Hi, Charity.
Hello, Ben.
I bet you're here to tell us what's on tap for tomorrow. What's going on?
And today is the last day of school for a lot of kids in Iowa. This week is the last week for a lot of kids.
I hear the roar of applause in the background, yes.
Right. But we're going to talk about the summer slide. We're going to be a bit of a bummer. We're going to talk about how a lot of kids lose a significant amount of learning in math and reading over the summer, up to 2 months.
I remember that. The math, I was just like, oh, I used to be able to do this, now I can't.
Exactly.
What happened over the summer?
So we'll talk about how significant that is. We'll talk about the achievement gap between lower-income kids and higher-income kids. And we'll talk about things we can do to prevent the summer slide.
Okay. Charity Nebbe, host of Talk of Iowa, will tune in tomorrow at 10 o'clock here at noon tomorrow. We'll be talking about President Obama's new initiative on carbon emissions. We'll hope you'll tune in for that as well. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.